The government says there's more money in our pockets.
And more money leaving our pockets.
From APM, American Public Media in Los Angeles. Hello, I'm Jeremy Hobson.
And I'm Steve Chiotakis. You're listening to the Marketplace Midday Update from Marketplace.org. Happy Friday. It's May 27th.
Happy Friday, Steve, and happy Memorial Day weekend to you.
Yes, yes.
Coming up, we'll look at the latest economic data.
We're going to find out if governments around the world are cutting too much too soon, given the fragility of the economic recovery.
Also, we'll find out why Miami Heat superstar LeBron James isn't getting the love you might expect.
Oh, and I'll talk mobile payments with the host of Marketplace Tech Report, John Moe.
It's all coming up right here on the Marketplace Midday Update.
Balance your life with dollar signs. Tune into Marketplace Money this weekend for a look at the issues affecting your wallet. Whether it's investing, renting an apartment, or sending your kid off to college, we'll help you navigate.
We'll start with some economic data. Americans are making a little more money and shelling out more of it, too. The Commerce Department said this morning that personal spending was up 4/10% in April.
But we're spending almost all of it, Jeremy, on more expensive gasoline and food. When adjusted for inflation, the rise in spending, this is according to the Commerce Department, is pretty much nil, about 0.1%. Jill Schlesinger is editor-at-large at CBS Money Watch. She's with us from New York, as she is every Friday. Good morning, Jill.
Good morning.
So what do these numbers say about American consumers?
Well, I think they were pretty underwhelming. I mean, it's the 10th straight month of increased spending. But as you said, we're spending more of our money on gas and food. And, you know, what we're really knowing here is that we're spending more in the economy, but we're not getting back as much in return. And that's not good.
We got the revision, Jill, to the GDP yesterday, still pretty tepid at 1.8% annual growth. What happened to this supposed recovery we were experiencing?
Well, in the first quarter, we had the old culprit, bad weather. We always use that when things don't look good. We also had a pullback in defense spending and a spike in oil prices. All of those things siphon money away from the American pocketbook. Add to those concerns big picture issues, rough U.S. employment and housing market, shaky state and local government finances, and lingering worries over the European debt issues, and you have a classic slowdown.
So, all right, what can we do about it? What can we do about this slowdown? Is it political, or can anything really be done, Jill?
Well, I think the Fed could continue its program of buying bonds, but I don't think that's going to actually create a real boost, so I wouldn't vote for that one. Politicians, they could renew some of last year's temporary tax cuts and credits. But at the end of the day, I think this renewed conversation about the nation's debt and deficit problems are going to trump any major government action that would spur economic growth. So it looks like we're going to be in a classic slow growth mode, at least for another quarter.
Jill Schlesinger from CBS Money Watch. Jill, thanks.
Thank you.
To Japan now, where economists are cheering news that prices are rising. Consumer prices rose by 0.6% last month. That's the first increase in 2 years. The BBC's Roland Burke is with us now from Tokyo with the details. Good morning.
Good morning.
So is this all earthquake related, the reason consumer prices are rising?
It's certainly partially earthquake related. The earthquake and the tsunami, of course, knocked out some of Japan's nuclear power. That means the country's had to import more fuel. And of course, oil prices have been going up. There are some other reasons, though. A year ago, the government made changes to the amount that people had to pay for high schools. That distorted the figures then. It's now worked through the system. So we're seeing this rise in prices today.
And why has deflation been such a problem in Japan for so many years?
The underlying problem in Japan is that the country is getting older. More and more people are retiring. So there's downward pressure on wages. I think the other thing is that it really becomes a habit for people. You know, companies start to pander to people's needs to pay less. McDonald's, for example, introduced 100 yen, you know, just over a dollar menus a few years ago. Mm. There's a battle between companies to make jeans for the cheapest possible price. You can buy a pair of jeans for about $5 now in Japan. Once you're in that downward spiral, it's very hard to pull out of it.
Well, are people excited that prices are finally rising after all these years?
They certainly don't seem to be. I think perhaps because the government is saying that this is just a blip. They're not saying that deflation has been beaten. They just say that in this month, because of these unique circumstances, prices have risen. But the ongoing battle that's been going on for years now to beat deflation, that's still going to have to be fought over the months to come.
The BBC's Roland Burke in Tokyo. Thanks, Roland.
Thanks very much indeed.
Well, it's part of a Republican plan to reduce the federal deficits, privatizing part of the nation's passenger rail system. At a House transportation hearing yesterday, we learned about the GOP plan to sell investors the busy Amtrak line between Boston and Washington. Marketplace's John Dimsdale reports.
House Republicans want to sell Amtrak's train stations and tracks in the Northeast Corridor to companies that would build a high-speed rail service. One investor, Ignacio Gianti of Corsair Capital, says he knows businesses that are willing to raise as much as $60 billion for high-speed service over the next 10 years.
This, I emphasize, is $50 to $60 billion of private sector investment with no federal subsidy to maintain the infrastructure.
But Amtrak's defenders, like New Jersey's Democratic Senator Frank Lautenberg, say riders on the rail would pay a lot more under the Republican plan.
Investors expect a return. They're going to want to price the product at a sufficiently high price to get that return. So we have to be careful about that.
Amtrak has its own plans for high-speed rail service, but it'll take 30 years and cost $117 billion. In Washington, I'm John Dimsdale for Marketplace.
The state of New Jersey has pulled out of the regional greenhouse gas initiative. REGI, as it's known, originally included 10 states in the Northeast that agreed to work together to reduce pollution. But Marketplace's Eve Tro reports New Jersey Governor Chris Christie has doubts, not about the problem, but about how the states are tackling it.
The Republican governor started by saying he believes climate change is happening. He believes humans are causing it. But he doesn't believe REGI is making a dent in the global problem. While New Jersey buys carbon credits, coal plants burn unfettered next door in Pennsylvania, a non-REGI state.
And it simply doesn't work. We're not going to participate anymore in something that doesn't work.
I don't think there is any economic or environmental justification for the governor's action.
Dale Brick is with the Natural Resources Defense Council. She says an independent study shows REGI's cut pollution by 30% across the 10 states. It's spurred investments in efficiency. That's lowered energy bills. She says New Jersey may not have seen as many benefits because the governor raided his REGI fund. He used $64 million earmarked for clean energy to close a budget gap. Governor Christie says his state can do better on its own without REGI. I'm Eve Tro for Marketplace.
Well, if you can't get enough Marketplace Midday Update, we encourage you to follow at Marketplace Radio on Twitter, or you can like APM Marketplace on Facebook.
You can also follow us on Twitter. Jeremy and I both have Twitter accounts. I'm at Radio Chio.
And I am at Jeremy Hobson.
Marketplace covers the world of economics. Are you ready for some Freakonomics? We're partnering with the team that writes about the hidden side of everything for a regular Marketplace Freakonomics story, podcast, and more. Just go to FreakonomicsRadio.com.
Now to the Marketplace global perspective. War crimes suspect Ratko Mladic was in court in Belgrade. Mladic is accused of directing the slaughter of 8,000 Muslims in 1995. He was arrested yesterday. And today, a judge said he's fit to be extradited to a UN war crimes tribunal in The Hague. Now, some observers say this clears the path towards Serbia joining the European Union and becoming a more established member of the global financial community. Marketplace's Europe correspondent Stephen Beard has more.
The arrest of Ratko Mladic was a precondition for Serbia joining the EU. There are others, among them a long list of political and economic reforms the country must carry out. But the capture of Mladic was the big one, the last major obstacle on the road to membership. Joining would mean a great deal to Serbia. It would bring in public funds worth billions from the EU. And, says Dragana Ignjatovic of IHS Global Insight, it would also send an important signal to foreign investors.
Serbia has been a pariah in Europe for a better part of two decades. And being a member of the EU would bring increased investment. It would signal that Serbia is a safe, desirable investment destination.
But years of negotiations still lie ahead. In spite of the arrest of Mladic, it could be almost a decade before Serbia is allowed to join the EU. In London, I'm Stephen Beard for Marketplace.
Now to the G8 meeting, which is wrapping up in France. In a statement this morning, leaders said rising commodity prices are a threat to the global recovery, but they said they remain focused on shoring up the sustainability of public finances. In other words, Steve, getting the debt situation under control.
Mm-hmm.
Let's bring in Chris Lowe, chief economist at FTN Financial, who joins us every Friday from New York. Good morning.
Good morning.
Well, Chris, as we look at this dichotomy of a fragile economic recovery and a need to deal with the debt, I want to focus on the U.S., first of all. Given all the data we've gotten this week, how fragile is our recovery right now?
Well, it's pretty clear things are slowing down in the second quarter. Since the middle of April, we've had an increase in the number of people filing for unemployment insurance that has completely reversed the whole decline that took place in the first quarter. And then we also have a bunch of regional Fed banks telling us that manufacturing is slowing down around the country, too.
So things are slowing down. Is there any chance that Washington looks at that and says, you know what, maybe we shouldn't be cutting so quickly?
No, I don't think so. And actually, the news this week out of Washington is that the Biden Commission on the Deficit is pretty close to striking a deal which is going to cut spending and or raise taxes $3 to $6 trillion over the next 10 years. So, in fact, the government's moving in the opposite direction, away from stimulus.
Well, should we be worried about that in terms of our economic recovery?
Well, we always reach this point in the recovery where the government has to step back. It can't keep increasing spending forever. And we always worry, but it usually turns out okay. And I think the reason it'll turn out okay this time is that the U.S. economy is, of course, a consumer-driven economy. The slowdown is coming now mostly because gas prices are high, and we will get some price relief later in the year because of the austerity that's taking place everywhere else in the world.
Chris Lowe, chief economist with FTN Financial, thanks so much as always.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Well, Jeremy and Chris, Panasonic is moving its headquarters down the road from Secaucus, New Jersey, to Newark. When the company announced the move last month, it said it was attracted to Newark's public transit system. But there's also a $100 million package of tax credits involved, too. That could be some of the attraction. From the Transportation Nation Project at WNYC, Andrea Bernstein reports.
The Panasonic move is a huge deal for Newark, a historically depressed city still mired in the memory of 1967 riots. Mayor Cory Booker couldn't have been more ecstatic.
Surely in my lifetime, there is no man I have tried to woo more than Joe Taylor.
Taylor is the CEO of Panasonic. He says his company is leaving its headquarters in Secaucus, New Jersey, because there too many of its employees have to drive to work.
We couldn't possibly demonstrate our commitment and our credibility to being a green company and ask 1,000 people to drive their car to work every day.
Panasonic will locate within a block of Newark Penn Station, with connections to Amtrak and several commuter rail lines. It also helped that Panasonic reaped more than $100 million urban transit hub tax credit. If a big company locates near a transit line, it gets a bundle of goodies from the state. Pete Kasabach of the planning group New Jersey Future says it makes sense.
Our distressed cities in particular need some incentives in order to bring the first wave of companies back in.
The measure was pushed through by the former Democratic governor, John Corzine, an environmentalist. But it's been embraced by the current governor, Republican Chris Christie, a famous cost cutter, because he says it will help the economy. Pete Kasabach.
In many ways, we hope that other states don't do this.
Mayor Booker says because of the transit tax credit, he's got 4 or 5 more companies on the line.
It's going to help us land a few more big whales.
But Booker acknowledges it's not just being near transit. It's the financial incentives for the companies.
You know, I think it's both. But let's be clear. The money was the major, major factor.
Have your employees ride transit, get government cash. That's a formula Booker hopes will make Newark go ka-ching. I'm Andrea Bernstein for Marketplace.
A new report says people are burning fewer calories at work, Jeremy. The study looked back 50 years, goes back to the 1960s. And it says men and women today burn on average more than 120 fewer calories while on the job.
They're
doing exactly
down,
what we're doing right now.
Sitting down, using the computer.
Using the computer and not really, I mean, just pretty sedentary lifestyle. Absolutely. Or work style, as it were. Personally, I'm pretty much sure it's the donuts.
That could
That's
have something
going
to do with it.
They bring donuts in every... I'm telling
every
you, folks,
day.
It's awful.
You know, yeah, everywhere I've worked, there's always somebody that brings in cakes, cookies, donuts. They never decide to bring in, you know, a bowl of blueberries or... Come on.
I'm kind of glad they don't bring in the bowl of blueberries.
I would eat the blueberries,
I like the donuts better. I don't know. Well, eBay, which owns the online payment firm PayPal, is suing Google and two of its executives for stealing trade secrets related to mobile payment systems. Now, Google just announced it's developing a way for users to pay for a whole host of things with their cell phones, but there are a lot of details to work out as well. John Moe is host of Marketplace Tech Report, and he's with us now. Good morning, John.
Hey, Steve.
Now, why is this the next big thing?
Part of the reason is that everybody else in the world is already doing it.
Keeping up with the Joneses, right?
Exactly. Billions of dollars being passed around through some form of mobile payment all over the world. People like it. They have their phones with them. And the other big reason is that all the technology companies are looking for an advantage. Every phone maker, every carrier, Google, Apple, BlackBerry, they're all looking for an advantage over what are really pretty similar products and services. And if anyone can offer something new, that gives them a leg up. And after that, everyone else needs to catch up with the company that did something new.
So when, John, does this become our brave new world?
It's going to take a lot longer, I think, than a lot of people are saying right now. I mean, Google's launch with Wallet is just going to happen in a few cities through a handful of stores if you're on Sprint and have this one model of phone. So it narrows it down to like one guy in the Bronx buying a sandwich at Subway.
Or Queens or somewhere in New York.
Yeah, exactly.
So who wins here, John?
Well, the banks and the credit card companies are likely going to be winners here because they will probably be a part of many of these transactions. In Google's case with Google Wallet, Google wins too. They collect advertising information on users, and that's as good as gold these days.
And who loses?
Well, me and you if we're buying more junk that we don't need. There's also going to be a little hit to merchants because they're going to need to make sure that their card readers are equipped to do these sorts of things. And the more different sorts of mobile payment plans come on board, they're going to have to train workers. They're going to have to kind of figure out how this whole thing works. So there's a bit of a hassle factor, too, that they're going to have to accept just in order to sell these things they want to sell.
Marketplace Tech Report host John Moe. John, thanks.
Thanks, Steve.
Well, Steve, I don't know about you, but I was up very late last night watching the Miami Heat and the Chicago Bulls play each other. By the way, you know, when I do watch those games, I just get so excited that I then can't go to sleep afterwards.
Yeah, you're wound
I end up getting like an hour of sleep.
My dad called me and was talking about the Bulls last night. He was all upset about it.
Well, yeah. I mean, these games in the playoffs this year, they have just been, you know, one team will be leading all the way through, and then at the very end, boom, it turns around.
They blew a 10-point lead last night.
A 12-point lead the Bulls did in the final minutes of the game, and the Miami Heat will now take the Eastern Conference title, and they will play the Dallas Mavericks in the NBA Finals next week. But Miami's star player, LeBron James, is not exactly getting the love that you might expect for a player that really does the amazing things on the court that he does. And as Phil Latzman reports from Miami, it's all about his brand.
Since bolting Cleveland to bring his talents to South Beach last year, LeBron hasn't done himself any favors, at least according to sports marketing executive Brandon Steiner.
Absolutely not. I mean, he's flat.
Even with the Heat's success, Steiner believes King James's crown has lost much of its luster.
You know, he has a few sponsors that have stuck with him, and Nike is notorious for staying with their players. They're very loyal, but, you know, I don't think that they are having a banner year with LeBron.
But there are signs that the LeBron brand is doing just fine. His number 6 Miami Heat jersey recently overtook Kobe Bryant's as the top-selling in the NBA. Still, though, it seems everyone outside of South Florida is rooting against the Heat because of LeBron. And Steiner says winning won't cure the ill feelings right away.
The question is, how do you settle up with the fans and get people to like you again? And does that even matter to him? Or do you play the villain role and be the bad boy?
Steiner says, unlike some infamous athletes before him, James hasn't committed any crimes and has plenty of time to get back in the good graces of both fans and sponsors. In Miami, I'm Phil Latzman for Marketplace.
And finally, to Oregon, Steve, where lawmakers, they've had enough.
Enough.
They've had enough of the gift cards with just a few dollars left on them. That's a real big issue in Oregon.
I know this is a problem.
You know, what is somebody supposed to do with a $2.08 Best Buy gift card? Buy a pack of gum?
Best Buy's personal gum.
You probably can't even buy a cord for your TV for $2.08. Well, the Oregon House has voted to allow consumers to trade in their gift cards with less than $5 remaining on them for cash.
Oh, that's nice.
That's right. Well, the lawmaker behind the legislation says in Oregon alone, unredeemed cards account for $100 million.
That's a lot of money. I could.
You could probably buy some more than just gum with that money.
Yeah, so it would be nice to get 100 mil on just one gift card.
Well, in Los Angeles, I'm Jeremy Hobson.
And I'm Steve Chiatakis. Have a great Memorial Day weekend.
Enjoy. This is the Marketplace Midday Update.
And this is APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.